open the City Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. So we have a unique schedule this morning. We're going to go at 8:45 and hear House Bill 3532, which we have to do. Mary's going to talk to us about the urgency of this bill, some time sensitivity, and then we're going to have to reconvene the committee for the 48-hour posting requirement. So we'll reconvene the committee at 9:20 if House Bill 3532 does not last for 30 minutes, which I suspect it will not. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3532.
Okay.
Mary, how was your weekend?
Very good. How was yours?
It was great.
Great. Thank you. House Bill 3532 is an emergency bill that the Department of Revenue staff brought forward to the House Revenue Committee a few weeks ago because it deals with the dilemma that many counties are facing today with regard to their loss of federal forest revenues. And basically what's happening is here is that the Department of Revenue has to distributes CAFA funds based on each county's ability to administer property taxes. Well, with the loss of O&C federal forest revenues, many of these counties are not going to be able to do that very well. And if they cut back on their ability to do their county assessments properly, the Department of Revenue has to go in as of April 15th and distribute differently than it wants to distribute. It will have to lower the distributions to counties that can't come up to the initial amounts that they should have to come up to in order to do their assessments. That's basically what's going on here, but I will explain it a little bit more right now. It permits a county, this bill will permit a county to reduce its certified expenditures for this fiscal year ending June 30th, 2007, while allowing it to continue to receive the CAFA funding based on prior year's percent change if the following conditions are satisfied. First, revenue in the prior year had to have been supplemented by certain federal payments in the amount equal to at least 10% of the expenditures certified by the department. The reduction in county expenditures cannot exceed 10% of the prior year's certified expenditures, and the reduction in the county's expenditures cannot result in a failure by the county to administer property taxes, declares a state of emergency, and takes effect upon passage. And the reason there is an emergency, as I said, is that on April 15th, the department must determine how much each county will get from the CAFA funding for tax administration. And this determination is based on their estimates of each county's certified expenditures for the forthcoming year, which are going to be seriously lessened for some counties that are lacking those federal forest revenues.
Great. Questions for Mary. So let's hear from the department first to talk to us about, and then we'll hear from the counties to get a sense of, first, the more technical side of how we distribute the funds to counties. And obviously a big question also is going to be any federal action on this and how this would affect, how this bill would play into the bill that Senator Wyden, at least last time I heard from him, feels pretty confident might actually get through, and this whole five-year ramp-off might happen, and how that affects this bill would affect that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Karen Gregory. I'm the administrator of the Property Tax Division of the Department of Revenue. The CAFA, what we call CAFA, which is the County Assessment Function Assistance Funding Account, is a grant program that was created by the legislature in the late 1980s to help bring up the property tax system from the disintegration that was occurring at that time. CAFA was created to stabilize that system, and it's funded through a fee on the recording fees on most of the recordings that go on in the counties, as well as a percentage of the delinquent entrance payments. Each year, county commissioners, as Mary said, are required to certify to the department an adequate level of funding for the assessment and taxation function in their county, and that's for the coming fiscal year. If the funding is determined to be adequate, then the department certifies their plan, and the county receives their portion of the CAFA distribution on a quarterly basis. And to give you an idea of how large that is, on an annual basis right now, it's about $22 million that's spread amongst the counties. As you know, a number of the counties are faced with the possibility of losing significant federal participation in what was PL 106-393, and some counties have made staffing decisions to plan for that potential shortfall in this fiscal year. Now, the Department of Revenue is charged by law to redistribute the distributions to a county in the event that any county fails to live up to what they certified in their budget. So that's why we're here today. There have been some cuts taken at the county level, and we would like the counties to have a little more flexibility in being able to still receive their CAFA funds. So we're here in support of House Bill 3532 as amended. This bill will allow the counties affected by the potential loss to make some modifications in their certified budgets, and it also provides that the minimum standards must be maintained in assessment and taxation functions. So in other words, a county can take a cut, but they have to be able to maintain the minimum standards in the assessment and taxation function in order to continue to receive their distribution. So there are two more grant payments that are due in this fiscal year. This bill will allow the counties that have made some adjustments to their certified plans to still receive their two distributions as long as their minimum standards are maintained. Mr. Chair, you asked about Senator Wyden's bill. Even if that bill passes, the funding will be forward, and this actually is for the funding for the CAFA distribution that would be in April and then in June or July. So this bill would still be effective even if that funding were to come through. The cuts have already been taken in some of the counties. So we really appreciate the speed at which this bill is moving. We brought this issue before the House Revenue Committee in February, and it's been on a very fast time frame. We appreciate the action that they have taken and the action that you folks are as well. And we want to thank you, and we think this will provide counties with a bit more flexibility. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Senator Monroe.
Would this bill have any effect prospectively in future years, or is it just for this little window that we're talking about?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, the way the bill is written, it is only good through the 06-07 fiscal year.
Thank you.
Is there any issue with the date today that it's the 9th of April? And I don't know if we get this to the governor's desk. Say it just speeds right along. I don't know if we date the 15th and getting it to the governor's desk. Is that an issue? Or,
Mr. Chair, what we're prepared to do is, since it is on a fast track, we will go ahead and make the distributions to all of the counties except for the counties in question, hold back those dollars until this bill actually becomes law, and then distribute those dollars to them.
What, once you see
once we
Senate
see
action and
correct.
Or a sense that this
yes.
actually is going to get to the governor's
That's
desk.
Correct, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank
Donna,
you.
Donna, constitutional?
Mr. Chair. I'm fine with it. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you. For those listening, last bill we had, it was all going great until John came up and said we might have a constitutional issue. So good to hear we're...
Sorry.
This one, that's your job is to let us know that we're actually following the Constitution is kind of a key...
It's a good idea.
It is a good idea. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Counties. Judge MacArthur. And Mr. Erland.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Chair Deckert, members of the committee. I'm Mike MacArthur with the Association of Oregon Counties. We're here in support of House Bill 3532A. We really appreciate the Department of Revenue's foresight in seeing this problem coming, their willingness to be flexible and work with the counties who are affected. We don't know as yet what's going to happen on the federal front. We heard from Senator Wyden Friday that while he's still optimistic, conferees have not been appointed in the House. we need a conference committee. We need the conference committee to agree on language, which we hope is consistent with Senator Wyden's amendment. There's $20 billion in additional spending, of which our piece is a small amount that may be attached to the $100 billion for the war effort. After the conferees do agree, and after it's repassed by both houses, then the president will have his say, and he's threatened to veto the current language. So we just don't know if this is going to happen in this fiscal year. So this measure could be very timely. There are about a dozen counties that are affected by loss of more than 10% of their general funds. Which obviously they have a whole lot of flexibility when 65-75% of your funding in average counties goes to public safety. There's not a lot of flexibility there. So we really appreciate this measure. It will help, but our problem is ongoing. Even with the Wyden Amendment, even if the Wyden Amendment's passing, there's a 10% ramp down. And so we'll have this problem in the future as well. But this does help. Thank you.
Good morning, Senator Deckert, members of the committee. Assessors appreciate the Department of Revenue's hard work and flexibility to assist the counties. We think it's important to maintain minimum standards so all the 1,400-plus taxing districts can get their money every year, which includes K through 12 and counties. Little summary, property taxes bring in about $4 billion a year, and K through 12 gets about $1.6 billion of it. So it's a big system. So thank you.
So, Mr. Erland, we didn't get your name.
Oh,
it's in Monroe. It's
excuse me.
On top of his game this morning.
Well, it's early for me. I drove, so okay. Ray Erland, Clackamas County Assessor. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Judge MacArthur, Mr. Erland? We are killing time, too, because we have till 9:20 for our next hearing. How, I guess you met with Senator Wyden on Friday. I guess it's just reading tea leaves. No one can say for sure. He gave us a pretty good sense that he thought reading the, you know, once they get this whole other issue out of the way of whether the bill gets vetoed or not, that they're in a decent position to get this five-year county solution in place.
We didn't actually meet with him. We heard from him, and he's optimistic. But you know, the real question is, I mean, there's several questions, but how urgent is the funding for the Department of Defense? How long can they go along and let, you know, there's a standoff about with the president about the language. You know, I've heard maybe July they can move money around, keep the effort going, but that's speculative. There's also a lot of pressure to move that $20 billion in other funding for Katrina relief and drought aid for the farmers in the Midwest, of which our piece is just another small piece
of that
package. And so there's a lot of pressure to get that money on the street. And I heard from a lobbyist Thursday that said that there may be an effort to move that piece separately. So it's a guessing game, and my ability to predict what the federal government's going to do next is doesn't have a good track record.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Anyone else on House Bill 3532? Mary, anything else we should know before we move this bill right along?
No, Mr. Chair.
Close public hearing on House Bill 3532. Open a work session on House Bill 3532.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to recommend that House Bill 3532, as amended, be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 3532 forward with a due pass recommendation discussion. Senator Monroe.
Yeah, you need to talk to whoever does the scheduling and get it moved as quickly as possible. You know,
I think we're on that. That conversation has occurred. Anyone else on 3532? Any objections to that motion? So ordered. Senator George, you want
to
carry that bill? I think you have some of the counties that are.
I think he's a county commissioner, too. So.
Right. Okay, so we have two more important bills up that start at 9:20 because of a scheduling issue. So, Paul, I am going to adjourn the committee and then just okay. So we're recessed till 9:40. after a little delay to meet our 48-hour qualifications. So now we have two bills up, Senate Bill 859 dealing with the charitable checkoff list, which I see I sponsored. Does Senator Brown, does she have a bill in on? I thought she had a bill on charitable checkoff also. And then we have Senate Bill 760 for the lodging at the request of the Lodging Association. So let's do 859 first. We'll let Chris open a public hearing on Senate Bill 859. And Chris.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 859 modifies the charitable checkoff program. It would require at least 12 entities to be listed directly on the tax return and would require the Charitable Checkoff Commission to maintain an eligibility roster and would require that the commission prioritize the entities that appear on the tax return if more than 12 are eligible, and specifies how the prioritization is to occur. Essentially, there are those that have appeared on the return for at least 3 years are subject to removal from the form to make room for those that have not been on the form. And it lowers the donation requirement for maintaining eligibility from $50,000 to $25,000 and removes the reapplication requirement that the entity collect at least 10,000 signatures, and it also removes the requirement that specific dollar amounts be listed on the tax return. You also have in front of you, by way of background, a handout entitled the 2005 Charitable Checkoff Program. And there are two tables on there for tax year 2005. One table that lists the charities that were on the tax form and those that were in the instruction booklet. And you can see how long the charities have either been on the form or in the instruction booklet, as well as the number of charities, a number of contributions that have been made to these charities, the amount of those contributions, and the average of those contributions. Generally speaking, those that are on the return receive a lot more money, but a smaller average amount, and those that are in the instruction booklet have larger average donations, but a far fewer number of people contributing to those charities. Also, on that table, there is a column entitled SB 859 listed, and those black dots there indicate which charities would be on the list were 859 to take effect. Those would be the 12 charities that would appear on the tax return in 09, assuming no other changes. And then there's also a table at the bottom there by tax return where we can see that about 38,000 tax returns in 2005 made some kind of contribution. On average, they contributed to about 2.5 charities, so somewhere between 2 and 3 is what people contribute to for an average contribution of about $20 and the total of $784,000 in contributions for that year.
I can't find that chart, Chris. Questions for Chris? Well, I'll just say by way of introduction, I introduced the bill after talking to Carol Hushman, who's here from SMART, and Habitat for Humanity, two charities that I'm familiar with at their experience at dealing with the current program that I think was modified like 3 or 4 years ago. And obviously the thought in this bill is that there might be a better way to allow more charities into the program and a more fluent process to allow them access. Thank you very much to the program. So with that, Sasha Pollock, who works in my office, has been working on this, and I believe Mr. McDonald from the commission, who we set up to help broker the many nonprofits throughout the state and their access to our tax forms. Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Sasha Pollack. I work for Senator Deckard's office, as he said. I'm delighted to be here today representing this bill. We've been working with the commission, the Charitable Checkoff Commission, and Chair McDonald on this. What we're trying to do is make this a fairer program and allow any charitable entity that goes through the hoops that we have set up through the Charitable Checkoff Commission to get the same billing on the tax form as any other entity that does those same things. So with that, I'm going to give Chair McDonald some time to give some history and some background on this.
Good morning. My name is Matt McDonald. I'm chairman of the Charitable Checkoff Commission. I was appointed by Governor Kitzhafer to the commission, and when Governor Kulongowski became the governor, the chairman resigned, and I was elected the chairman at that time. Normally, we have one meeting a year to ensure that the legislative directives are being met by the charities. Last year, we had three meetings. The reason for the three meetings, it was brought up that the charitable checkoff system was not fair and equitable to all entities. On the second meeting, we invited all the charities to testify, and we gave an overview of what other states were doing. On the third meeting, we came to a decision that we needed to change it and make it fair and equitable to all entities in the that are in the system. There are 23 charities currently involved in it. You have in front of you two pieces of paper that I passed out. One is a draft which will go from 6 to 12 entities that will be on the tax form, meaning more money for those people that are on the tax form. The people on the tax form, each one of the 6 individually, make more than the other 17 that are in the booklet.
Say that again.
Each entity on the tax form, each one makes more than the other 17 combined.
Combined.
Therefore, it is very favorable to be on the tax form. If you, one of the people on the tax form is small, non-game, small animals, and I don't think it's up to the commission or to check and see whether that is more important than Dawn Becker's Hospital or the Shriners Hospital or Humane Society. And what the commission did is they voted unanimously to make this change, with one person being absent from the last two meetings because of his work. But the commission definitely wants to make the changes. There is a couple of changes in the bill that we'd like to see. And on page 2 of the bill, line 23 and 27 is the 3 years. We'd like to see that change to 2 years, meaning that those that are on the tax form itself will be on there for 2 more years, and then they will go into the rotation.
Can you repeat where you're...
Line 23 and 27, it talks about 3 years, being on the tax form for 3 years. We'd like to change that to 2 years. We think that's fair, that those people that are on the tax form now will continue on the tax form for 2 more years, and then they'll be rotated off with everybody else. And then on page 4, line 20 and 21, it talks about the space for designation shall also provide a checkoff boxes for the amount of $1, $5, and $10. We'd like to see that line completely eliminated, which means we can have 2 more entities on the tax form.
So would that then allow just the individual, when they're doing their tax return, to just put in whatever number
they want to put in? But what it means is, rather than having 10 charities on the tax form, we can now have 12.
I see. It would open up 2 lines for you.
Those 2 lines. Also, we have one other thing.
There was one other, again, Sasha Pollack, there was one other amendment. In Section 6 of the bill, as we were reading it over, it's entered in there. As it currently reads, it would require the charities that are currently on the form to go back and get the 10,000 signatures that they didn't get when they were grandfathered in, and all the other charities are required to do. That was something we did not intend to have happen, so we're trying to remove that. We don't think it's fair to those charities to require them at this point to get those 10,000 signatures.
That's Section A, lines 43 through 43 through 45, and
number
line
1
on page 4.
And are these amendments being drafted?
They are.
All 3?
They are.
Okay.
The result of this bill will mean that we have charities that will be getting more money, and that's really the object of the whole system, since you will have 12 charities on the tax form itself that was, and the this tax form was developed by the Department of Revenue, so they've already okayed it. And it also, this bill also makes it all charities are under the same rules. It's pretty difficult when some charities were brought in by the legislature, some charities were brought in by application, and they had different rules. And those that are brought in by the legislature, sometimes the commission has problems with them because they feel they're not answerable to the commission. They're only answerable to the legislature. And one charity last year we had to put on probation because they didn't show up for the charitable checkoff meetings.
Hmm.
They now understand if they don't show up, we're going to take them off the list. But this makes everybody on the same playing field with the same rules. It makes it fair and equitable to all the charities. And I think it's a good bill. I think the people of Oregon, the charities, will both benefit by this bill.
Great, thank
you. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Questions for Ms. Pollack or Mr. McDonald? How many members of your commission?
There's 5 members.
And the vote was unanimous to...
We had a unanimous vote with one person being absent because of his work. He's a winemaker, and when we were having the commission meetings, he was busy harvesting.
Harvesting his...
So he couldn't make it.
Good excuse.
But the commission voted unanimously for these changes.
For these changes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burke.
Do you keep track every year of the total money that's contributed to charity?
We keep track of the total money. We don't. The Department of Finance, Revenue does. Keeps track of the monies donated and the number of people that participate and the average contribution for each entity.
Because it'd be interesting to see if this actually builds overall contributions, because you'd have more of a cross-section of different types of charities.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, it's very obvious that those on the tax form make a lot more money than those in the tax booklet. Unfortunately, it's human nature. It's in front of you. We'll do that. It's in the booklet. I'd have to look it up so that some of them don't. But I think it's a win-win situation for Oregon. And we looked at other states, and other states have a lot of different rules, but there are other states that do this, and I think we have the best system, and I think this bill will fix any problems we have of being unfair and not equitable.
How has the signature requirement, was the nature of...
Mr. Chairman, when they apply, they must get 10,000 signatures, and what that does... It ensures that that charity has the backing of the public to be on the charitable checkoff list. One of the problems in the past is once you're on the list, some of the charities had to get 10,000 signatures every 6 years. Other charities did not have to do that because the rules were different for different people coming in. Under this bill, they'll have to get 10,000 signatures initially, and that's it. They will forever be on the checkoff list unless they don't follow the rules as set forth by the legislature. And they will rotate, in rotation based on when they first came in.
So all these charities will have to go get 10,000 more signatures?
No. Already got the 10,000 signatures, if this bill passes, they will not have to get 10,000 signatures again. And let me tell you, I've been on the signature collection list, and it's a big job to get those 10,000 signatures.
I think we're going to hear from a few that have been out there trying to make the calculation, should we go and do it again for $30,000 or $20,000? Should we go out and expend that type of energy for $20,000?
That's true, and some people, it's cost some people some money because they've actually gone out and, I think, paid people to get the signatures.
Huh.
At least that's what I've heard. And it's really foolish because all these charities are million-dollar operations. Mm-hmm. And all these charities are very viable. They're good for the state of Oregon. In fact, I don't know what the state would do without them because the monies that they collect, if they didn't collect, they'd be up here asking the state to provide.
good point. Thank you for your service on the Charitable Commission. We appreciate it. Other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you, too, Mr. McDonald, for your volunteer effort and your good work on this commission, and particularly for the drafting of this bill. I think it makes the whole system much more fair, and I'm sure that it will go a long ways toward meeting charitable needs of people that these charities serve. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Ms. Hushman, Ms. Trainer from OHSU, and Ms. Tenike. Is that a great name?
Very Dutch.
And Ms. Hushman, Carol, you're first on the list, so do you want to lead off and then we'll go in order, OHSU and then to Habitat for Humanity?
Good morning, Chair Deckard and members of the committee. My name is Carol Hushman. I'm the development manager for the Smart Reading Program. Our address is 219 Northwest 12th Avenue in Portland, Oregon, 97209. I'm here today, and I'm delighted to testify in support of Senate Bill 859. I represent SMART. We were one of the first organizations to collect the 10,000 signatures to be listed in the tax instruction booklet, along with we're one of 17 organizations currently there. Not being on the actual tax form has had a tremendous impact on the dollars generated for the participating charities. And one point I'd like to bring up that I don't think was mentioned is that there is only one space to write in one of the additional 17 charities. So it's easy to give a contribution to the listed organizations, but then if you're writing one in, you have to choose only one of those 17, and that greatly impacts revenue on this program. Just wanted to tell you briefly about SMART. We're a nonprofit literacy program here in Oregon. We serve K through third grade students in low-income public elementary schools. We match community volunteers with children who've been identified by their classroom teacher being at risk of not reading at grade level by the time they leave elementary school. We also give children two free books a month to build home libraries. Oregon needs a program like SMART. The National Assessment of Educational Progress said that more than one in three Oregon fourth graders read below even the basic level. And when our children can't read, they're more likely to drop out of school and less likely to be successfully employed. Since 1992, when we started, we've served 100,000 Oregon children, given away 1.4 million books, and coordinated 2.3 million volunteer hours. Senate Bill 859 comes at a crucial time for SMART. Six charities, including SMART, must collect the 10,000 signatures by June 1st, 2007, to continue as a participant. In the 5 years, and tax year 2006 is still in progress, so we don't have results for that year, but the five organizations currently listed on the tax form received over 475,000 individual gifts, raising over $3 million for those organizations over 5 years. That's an average of over $600,000 per organization. The six organizations, including SMART, that started in 2001 that are listed in the tax instruction booklet, have received only slightly over 17,000 gifts and less than $240,000 total. So the average per organization is less than $40,000 over 5 years. So when thinking about collecting the 10,000 signatures, and we were proud that we didn't stand on street corners to collect our last ones. We didn't pay for them. We collected them from our constituents. We just really don't want to have to do that again. So in conclusion, SMART supports Senate Bill 859. We have over 10,000 volunteers, teachers, and parents who would be more inclined to support us if they saw us on the form, and it would help in broaden statewide support for our organization, attracting and growing grassroots funding that we need. Thank you very much for this opportunity to testify. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
questions for Ms. Fishman. What have you, you kind of brought this to my attention, Carol, about 8 months ago or 9 months ago. Mm-hmm. Would have SMART, if we keep the current system in place and make no changes, would SMART go and get the 10,000 signatures or just say, we'll spend our energy in other places?
I think it would be very likely, Chair Deckard, that we would not collect the signatures to remain.
To remain on it.
Mm-hmm.
OHSU.
I'm Lynn Trainer. I'm with the Dornbecker Children's Hospital Foundation. My title is Grants and Stewardship Manager. Our address is 1121 Southwest Salmon in Portland. Dornbecker Children's Hospital is the children's hospital at OHSU. We serve about 50,000 children a year. They come from all over the state for the most complex problems. 80 years ago, when Dornbecker started, it was 100% funded by the state. Today, we get no direct support from the state for our services, so we rely on patient fees and community support to provide our services. We've been part of the program, I think this is our fifth year, and we've been very pleased to be part of the program. Just to give a comparison at the difference, OHSU's Alzheimer's Research Program is on the tax form, and last year through the end of September, they'd received $114,000 from 16,174 contributors. Dornbecker, which is a write-in, received $17,614 from 876 contributors. So a tremendous difference. And so we would support rotating the names on the form just to be fair to all of the organizations involved. And we, too, are coming up next year on having to do a petition drive. We were only able to qualify because we have a relationship with Kiwanis clubs throughout the region, and as part of their efforts and their participation in the state fair, they collected signatures. It took them 2 years to do it. I mean, they had to try twice. So as we look forward to having to do that process again, though the $17,000 certainly does help us, the manpower involved probably doesn't warrant us going out to do that drive again. And we really appreciate being part of the program and would like to continue.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you.
Good morning, Senator Deckard and members of the committee. My name is Patricia Day Ten Eyck. I am the Executive Director for Habitat for Humanity of Oregon. We're located at 1478 Northeast Killingsworth in Portland. I'd like to begin my testimony, unfortunately, with an apology and admit to my extreme embarrassment. Unfortunately, I don't have my written testimony to hand out to all of you this morning. It seems that my eighth grade son has my public testimony and I have his Catcher in the Rye book report. He'll have an interesting day as well.
So how's he going to explain how he didn't do his book report?
I'm not quite sure, but maybe they'll be impressed that he has public testimony before. Habitat for Humanity of Oregon is a state support organization. Our mission is to develop resources, both financial and other resources, for the 35 Habitat affiliates found throughout Oregon. Habitat for Humanity provides homes in partnership with hardworking families. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 859. Habitat Oregon has participated on behalf of all of the affiliates in Oregon in the charitable tax checkoff program for the past six years. We joined at the same time SMART did. Since that time, Habitat has been listed in the instruction booklet and has been the grateful recipient of approximately $150,000 over that time period, more or less about $25,000 a year. It goes up and down a little bit. All of this money has been distributed equally to all 35 affiliates in the state. It ends up being every year approximately about $700 that each affiliate receives. In contrast, those organizations, as you have heard, listed on the form itself, receive more money than all of the charities listed in the tax booklet. all of the organizations participating in the Charitable Checkoff Program are extremely worthy organizations. All contribute greatly to the livability of Oregon, and all positively impact the lives of all Oregonians. I would never think, personally, of ranking any of these organizations as more deserving than another. But, however, this is precisely the impression that the current statute regarding the Charitable Checkoff Program gives to the general public through keeping certain organizations on the form in a prime position indefinitely. By requiring an ongoing, logical, and orderly rotation of organizations onto and off of the tax form itself, Senate Bill 859 addresses this perception of favoritism and brings fairness and equality to this extremely beneficial program. In terms of collecting the signatures, Habitat is in the process right now of collecting 10,000 signatures throughout the state. We do have 35 affiliates across the state who have been working for the past year on collecting these signatures for us. Unfortunately, Habitat has no large events that occur. We have 10 volunteers at a time on a building site working on building a home, and it's very difficult to collect these signatures. On behalf of all of the affiliates in the state who are very committed to remaining in the Charitable Checkoff Program, Habitat Oregon, it has now hired a firm to collect the remaining signatures that we need, and we will be spending our Habitat Oregon itself, on behalf of the affiliates, will be spending in excess of $13,000 to collect the remaining signatures, which is about 3,500 signatures more that we need to meet the deadline. So it is a hardship for many of the organizations. On a slightly side note to this as well, I have always been extremely impressed that Oregon is an initiative state, and you can get things on the ballot because there's people out there to support it. I think having to go out and collect signatures in this manner for a totally different program besides something political to go on the ballot dilutes the initiative process somewhat, because people get so immune to signature gatherers or signing petitions, they just don't want to deal with it. So I do think that that has an impact on the overall initiative process in Oregon. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify this morning, and I will be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Senator Monroe.
Yeah, a couple of things. So it costs about $10 per signature.
Well, obviously, it is not done per signature because
yeah,
that is.
I understand.
It's illegal. Yes, it is illegal. We right now are paying about $17 per hour for signature collectors to collect on behalf of.
But I thought you said you were going to spend $13,000. Okay.
Sorry.
So it's not quite as much as I thought.
Yes.
And I taught public school for 21 years, and I never had any student who didn't have his book report done come in and say, my mother took it to Salem, but I can read her testimony if you'd like.
Yes, he'll have a very interesting day himself, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Other questions? I would encourage, if you could, to hold off on spending, if you haven't spent it, the $13,000 and see the prospects of this bill. I'm seeing a lot of nods all around.
The problem, unfortunately, at this point is our deadline is June 1st of this year. We have to have those signatures in by June 1st.
Uh-huh.
So depending upon how quickly or how slowly this bill moves, and if it ends up impacting this last year, because this is the year that we had to requalify, is whether or not we need to continue to spend the funds to get the signatures. So it's
I'm just being good because I'd like, you know what I'd like to say, Mr. Chairman, if I could?
Sure. If you want,
I would like to say, if you had the $13,000 you could use it to solicit new volunteers, wouldn't you be way better off? This is a very good bill, and we need to move this as quick as we can.
Yes.
Yeah, I think, this is one chamber, and we got to get it through the House, but I think you're totally Habitat's decision. If you haven't spent it, you may be able to count on this bill.
That would be very nice. And again, this is money that's coming out of Habitat for Humanity of Oregon. On behalf of the 35 affiliates, all of the money we collect through this program goes out to all of the affiliates. None of the money is kept for administrative fees at Habitat Oregon. So this is money that we are having to expend on behalf of the affiliates because they want to continue very badly as part of the program. So this is
great. Portland Habitat has a big breakfast coming up, which I need to fill my table for here in like 2 weeks. So if anyone, anyone wants
two more seats my table as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Guys all do. Knowing Carol and the work that she does at SMART, you guys do a great service to Oregon, and we are incredibly thankful from Dornbecker to SMART to Habitat of the work that you do for our state.
Thank you, thank you very much.
Paula Brown, Elise Brown, two Browns. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Deckard, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paula Brown. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. The Oregon Veterans Home, located in the Dalles, is a 150-bed skilled nursing care facility. The Oregon Veterans Home has been fortunate to participate in the charitable checkoff program. I'd like to commend the commission, since I have this opportunity, for the work that they've done under the leadership of Mr. McDonald when they took a look at a way to improve the charitable checkoff program and make it a fair and equitable program for all participants. The department was pleased to be a part of that when the commission solicited input from all of the participants. In June of 2006 is when the idea was raised to the commission about a way of rotating those organizations' listings on the actual tax form. We believe this would be an excellent way for all of these worthy charities to fairly share in the exposure that position garners. This additional exposure would afford, by rotation of listing on the form, would be beneficial to all participants, including the Oregon Veterans Home. It would likely increase donations for all organizations. And that's kind of how we've taken the approach, is just in looking at what would be fair and equitable for all organizations. Oregonians have time and time again shown how generous they are, and we believe this also affords them the opportunity to continue that support. So just to quickly summarize, we view this as a good change that would improve the program, that it would result in a fair and equitable treatment of all participants, and it would increase donations by generous Oregonians to all of these worthy charities. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Good morning, Elise.
Good morning. The other Brown. Elise Brown, representing American Diabetes Association. And it's a pleasure to be here and to follow such great testimony from so many worthy organizations, and the Diabetes Association being one of them. We wholeheartedly support Senate Bill 859 for all the reasons stated. I think the two buzzwords that keep coming up are fair and equitable, and that's why I sit before you today. We were one of the organizations that went through the paid signature gathering process, and actually we are in the process of doing that again. Not on the paid side of it, but we are working through our grassroots networks right at this very moment to meet that deadline. So we hope that the committee will understand the importance of changing the process for the fair and equitable statements you've heard today. So I just wanted to be here and be on the record to say that. Thank you.
Thank you, Elise. Questions for either Ms. Brown or Ms. Brown? Thank you very much. Gary Conkling, Mark Nelson are our final two testifiers.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. I'm Gary Conkling, representing the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation. We, like other witnesses today, are supportive of Senate Bill 859. However, we do have one additional suggestion that's really born from sort of the changing reality today of how people, individual taxpayers, fill out their returns. Having had that experience this weekend for both myself and my son, I do mine electronically. I did my son's manually. He got a booklet. Because I've been doing electronic filing for several years, I no longer get a booklet. So if I hadn't seen his, I wouldn't have remembered. But what we're talking about here is a list and a printed booklet that increasing numbers of Oregonians who file electronically no longer receive. Hmm. I fill out my individual income tax form using TurboTax. There may be other programs, but this particular year I took note that the listed, the electronic questioning interview of TurboTax follows the general pattern of the printed form and lists the listed charities, and then allows you just to hit a link and all of them appear. It seems to us, at least, that it would be relatively easy, since they're already there, just to list them all without having to click them. This has nothing to do with the printed version. It would just, on the electronic version, create the modality of allowing all of the eligible organizations to appear without necessarily any respect to the rotation, which seems to us the fairest of all, in that they're all there. If they're all eligible, why shouldn't they be there? They're effectively all shown if you hit the hyperlink, even as it is. So it seems like at least making an amendment that will allow all of the charities to appear in electronic forms would be an easy addition, and a practical one and a useful one. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions for Gary? Can you talk to Mr. McDonald about and Department of Revenue? Do you guys want to comment on that as soon as we get done with our last, how we would accomplish that? And Gary, you'll follow up with the department and Mr. McDonald.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. That's a really good suggestion. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is not Mark Nelson. My name is Karen Mainzer, representing the Head Start Association. Head Start serves our state's lower-income 3- and 4-year-olds and their parents through a host of services, including pre-K education, health services, and parenting skills. We wholeheartedly support Senate Bill 859. I'm going to take a page out of Elise Brown's book and skip my entire testimony, which would just be repetitive, and just say that the change would create a fair and equitable rotation system in which a qualifying nonprofit would appear on the individual tax refunds every other year. The other thing we wanted to bring up, Head Start is in the process of collecting their 10,000 signatures as well, and we're looking to have to pay signature gatherers. And I recommend an amendment to put an emergency clause on the bill.
Oh, okay. Great. Two really good suggestions to make the bill matter more to nonprofits. And you'll follow up on that one? Great. Questions for this panel? Thank you. Thanks for the helpful suggestions. Okay, so department, do y'all have any thoughts on, now that you've heard kind of where the committee is, and about 5 amendments out there? Senator George, before we go to Deborah.
Thanks, because that might be irrelevant to the staff. I'm looking at the bill, and you saw me talking to Senator Monroe about the fact that is this rotation going to be in order? In other words, if you're the bottom of the list and then you come up to go to the front page list, you go to the top, and then you move down in an orderly fashion, so there is that fairness within that group?
Senator George, that's correct. The commission would create a list that would put in chronological order according to when they were certified,
right,
or made eligible. And then if only 12 were allowed on there, mm-hmm. if there were tiebreakers, there could be cases where you had to there were 5 charities that have the same tenure, but only 2 of them need to be removed. Mm-hmm. Then the bill specifies that those with the lowest average annual contributions would be removed first. That's the second ordering of the charities.
Okay, but on the listed on the form, then they would go
then
down the list in order
Yes, then those move to the bottom of the list.
I thought that's what that said, but I just want to
clarify. Yeah, it does have that rotation, so if you're taken off, then you're put first in line at the list, at the bottom of the list, rather, not first in line.
But when you come back onto the 12 list, you're going to be moving down that list in the same order? Am I misunderstanding what you're saying?
Well, the 12 that are on there
are
on there. It doesn't specify which order on the tax return will appear. But those that aren't on that list, there's an order to those.
The reason I ask that question, if you look at this list right here, you can see that it diminishes, and I'm assuming that's the order they're in.
Correct.
And so I would think that it would be important that they came, when you came onto the list, that you went to the top and then you moved down as others came on.
Right.
Does the bill provide for that? Or
yes.
Well, Mr.
It does.
Yes. Okay. Great.
You want to time it for a big kicker year to be right at the top of the list, right as you know, there you go.
Deborah. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue, and with me is J.P. Jones, who's also with the department. But if I could just make a few points, I will address Mr. Conkling's question first about the electronic filing. That is really a function of the software company and how they present that, so we could encourage them to not have a hyperlink and just list them all. Some of them may do that now, I don't know, but we don't mandate that they have a hyperlink and go to the instruction listing. So it would be perfectly fine if they want to list all of the entities.
And how would you go about encouraging them to do it?
When we go through the process of approving software, we could just make that information available to them and say there's no requirement to do a hyperlink if you want to list them. That would be acceptable, too.
Well, we would encourage it. What I'm fishing for is, do we need anything statutorily to encourage it? And you can think about that.
Thank you. May I just add a couple of other things, Mr. Chair? It was mentioned that the dollar boxes should be deleted, and we agree with that on page 4, lines 20 through 21. In order for us to put 12 entities on the form, those dollar boxes do need to go away. Otherwise, there's no space to do that. It's also not clear to me in reading the bill that if there isn't room for 12 entities without adding a page to the tax form itself, that we would be authorized to go to, for example, 10 entities. So if that's your desire, it does say on the front of the bill that the number of lines shall be sufficient to list 12 entities. So there's a little bit of concern that we would not be able to go below that number if, for example, there's thank you very much.
Okay, so Deborah, you want some language that allows, if you just can't fit 12 on the form, that allows you to go to 10 or...
Right. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
In addition to that, the testimony about the entities that are not on the form now brings up the question of how many lines you want for other charities. Right now there's one. So we have 6 named entities on the return and then one space to designate an other entity. So we're assuming that you also want to have something similar on this revised form. Do you want one other entity? Do you want 2 other entities? Are they part of the 12 entities? I'm assuming they're not. So in addition to the 12 named, there would be 1 or 2 other entities that the person could write in the name or a code and designate a dollar amount. The question of putting on an emergency clause came up. If you want this to apply to the 2007 year for gathering signatures, the emergency clause would be helpful, but I think that you would need other language if you want the changes to apply before tax year 2009. And that's because there's a definition on page 1 of the bill in existing law, lines 8 through 10, biennial years. And my reading of this means that the first tax year to which the other changes could apply would be the 2009 tax year.
We would want it to occur, I believe, before 2009. Just making sure everyone's nodding that if it's good policy. So can you, we'd like to get that corrected.
Okay. And would you like 2007, Mr. Chair? Would that be what the committee would want?
Well, I hear one 2007. I hear two.
Is that possible?
We will start preparation of the forms next month. So we should be able to, we could certainly look at that.
Okay. And well, if it's feasible, Is that mm-hmm. okay? So yeah, we've got four.
The chair, something perhaps like 2007 or as.
ASAP.
Or yeah, exactly. Or as soon as possible.
Otherwise possible.
I don't know what the legal term for ASAP is. whatever that is.
I think those were all of my comments, Mr. Chair. Unless Mr. Jones has something.
Senator Decker, no, sir.
You do not. Can we get all of these in one amendment instead of now? I hear, and this is great, to get about eight or nine different ideas on how to improve this process. It'd be great to get them in one or two amendments. And I hate, Mr. McDonald, I'm not sure if you're around the Capitol enough to have you be the gatekeeper. So
yes, sir, I'm also the veterans lobbyist, so I'm here every day.
Oh, okay, good. Great. Okay, so can I ask you to be the gatekeeper to amendments?
Yes.
And Sasha will help you.
Okay.
And Chris can be the third. Oh, great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions on the charitable at Senate Bill 859 before we close the hearing? Thanks. Appreciate all the helpful testimony and obviously the good work that the nonprofits do. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 859. Open and we'll bring that back hopefully next week. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 760. Mazen.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 760 deals with the issue of the transient lodging tax. This bill itself puts a process of allowing the local government to go with the transient lodging tax of their own if a certain level of requirements are satisfied. Just to refresh your memory with the transient lodging tax, it was a product of the 2003 session in House Bill 2267, where it approved it at 1% of 1% of the sales, if you will, at that time. Now, when the state tax came in, it grandfathered the local taxes in the cities of and counties. And allowed for those entities to continue collecting the taxes. However, it also required any new transient lodging tax, hotel motel tax, to be raised or new taxes to come in on the condition that 70% of the new taxes would be used for the same purpose that the state tax is used in, which is promotion of tourism. The other 30% could be used otherwise. I put some more of the background on your staff ledger summary, and I, having some information that this might not be a bill that is needed now as it used to be in the past, but that. Arranged to be seen, Mr. Chair.
Phil Perry? And anyone you want to bring? Just Bill.
Thank you, Chair Deckert. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Perry. I'm representing the Oregon Lodging Association. I was trying to work through the system on this bill to see if I could get around and talk to all the different cities and counties. I've talked to the individual lobbyists in the building, and I actually just didn't connect with a county association gentleman until just this morning, but just didn't ask for a hearing before this because I was trying to find out where we were. As staff mentioned, the reason this idea came about was that back in 2003 we had the statewide lodging tax. It set aside 15% for regional marketing. So basically saying take some of those dollars and take 15% and go out and try to encourage locals to develop regional marketing organizations and market different sections of the state. And the real intent was that I think a lot of people out in the hinterland Riverlands felt like you're going to collect money from Pendleton and spend it all in Portland because that's where all the money was. So this was an effort inside the bill to build regional organizations. Since that time, we've had 7 regional marketing organizations formed around the state, Eastern Oregon, Coast, Southern Oregon. It's the local CVBs that work together to market. And the largest one of these is Portland, or metro area, that spends about $7 million. The Coast spends about $1 million. It's kind of spread all over the map. The reason this idea came about was we kind of had 2 examples over the last year. One was Washington County. They did a lodging tax for marketing. And actually, when Washington County did it, they brought everybody in. There were obviously some people that opposed the tax, but what they did was, we're going to market, so how do we market? Brought in, you know, the regional folks, the state, the lodging operators, to try to say, how do we work into existing marketing systems? And I think they did a very good job, and when I talked to the representatives from Washington County, they said that the stuff that's in this bill would have met their process fairly well. On the flip side, we had an example where Klamath County raised the tax, and they just kind of raised the tax, and it met the letter of the law, meaning their marketing, but they didn't talk to anybody. And so what we're trying to deal with here is say, you know, how do we get this to work together? And so the bill, I was hoping would not face a lot of opposition, but I think we're going to find out it did, was number one, just to encourage people to work together. It only deals with new taxes, so any existing dollars that's being spent or any programs, it does not deal with. Second, I was not specific in drafting what you have to tell the state or the regionals. Just tell them you're thinking about raising a tax. It doesn't say you have to give this information, you have to give that information. It just says notify them that you're doing it. And I also, the bill does not specific on what the locals have to do with the information. If they give you a recommendation, you can tell them to go fly a kite. It doesn't matter. It's non-binding. But, I mean, the intent is that as we see some of these proposals, as you get down a road, it's harder to impact them at the end as it is in the front. And so what we're trying to do is just say, if you're thinking about raising local tourism dollars, just the tourism portion, at least communicate with the people that are organizing the regional efforts. Because I do think outside of the 15% that's set aside for the regional marketing, there's also match grants. So I would say that there's a benefit to the locals by doing it. I mean, like if Pendleton wanted to do something around the Roundup, obviously, people coming to Pendleton for the Roundup, they're going to come through Portland, they're going to do some, so there would be some ability to do some match grants on a specific example like that. And so, you know, I tried to make it so it wasn't binding. You know, I don't want them to be required to do anything except for notify. It's not a lengthy report, and what they do with the report, it doesn't say anything, but the intent, I think, of 2267 was to get people to start thinking regionally and working together in these little areas to try to make the marketing dollars go a little bit farther. Obviously, some of the specific cities and counties I've talked to thought we could do something, but I think the statewide organizations are going to be opposed to it. So that's why I hadn't asked for a hearing yet. I was trying to work through some of these kinks to see if we could at least get some language that would make them feel a little bit more comfortable that we're not trying to force them into anything, but I don't know if we're going to be able to accomplish that. I really do think that with the money that's being spent out there, it would be beneficial if we at least required people to start communicating at the front end. But at the same token, I don't want to require them to do things once they start communicating. I just would like them to be forced to at least talk to each other. So that was the intent of the bill. And like I said, I was hopeful that I would at least be able to get something that would make people feel more comfortable, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to accomplish that. So,
great. Questions for Mr. Perry.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Monroe.
I remember in 2003, I was on the Metro Council, and we were working very hard and had worked, I think, for 2 or 3 sessions to try and get something through that local governments and the industry would all support. We found that promotion of tourism, the number of dollars being spent on promoting tourism in Oregon, put us near the bottom of the list of all 50 states, and here we are. Everybody knows Oregon's the most beautiful state in the Union, and that we ought to be doing more to promote that. And we have just doubled the size of the convention center and spent a lot of your dollars for that. And it just seemed like a good thing to do. So my only concern about this bill is that it not unravel or undo the good work that was done in 2003 and that is working toward
getting more promotion, more dollars into promoting tourism in Oregon.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, and I actually think that the intent of this bill is to further that, because as we've seen that, you know, you've always had POVA, which is and COVA, which are Central Oregon. You've always had those regional marketing. Now we've got actually, I can never remember WOVA. There's Willamette Valley. I was trying to get the pronunciation of all these acronyms down, but I mean, there really is. There's more abilities for matching grants. There's more abilities as now that we've pooled the money together and worked together to really make those dollars go even farther. And I think the work that's been done has been, you know, I think it exceeds the expectations that we had. And once again, this bill does not require that if Klamath wants to raise it locally that they have to give it to the regional. It's just how do we get them to at least communicate so if the regional and Southern Oregon Visitors Association is doing something, they may give the county more or Klamath more, or they may just say, this is our target audience, how do you tie into it? I just think that as we look at what the intent of this legislation is not to force anybody to do anything but communicate, because we have had basically an increased amount of tourism promotion going on. Now the question is, how do we make sure everybody's on the same page in promoting it, because it makes the dollars go farther? The intent of the way this is written should not hinder anybody's opportunities. And I have told all the parties involved, if there's something that makes them feel more comfortable, like they're not being forced to do something, I'll change it. Force there is in this bill is to say, I'm going to raise a tax, I'm going to tell you about it. I mean, that's really the only thing that they're forced to do at that point. What do they have to tell the state? It doesn't say. What do they have to do with the information that the state gives them? Nothing. But as of right now, we're not getting the people that are originating the taxes to at least communicate with the regionals and the state at the time, and I just think there are a few missed opportunities, and we may see more in the long run. So,
other questions? Great. No one has signed up in opposition, so there is no one signed up.
I've been through this before. So.
They raised their hands I said that. Do you want to testify in opposition?
Mr. Chair, we would.
Okay. Cities and counties are...
Surprise, surprise.
Mr. Chair, Mike MacArthur, Association of Oregon Counties. I find Mr. Perry's intent here laudable, but forcing the people to talk together and putting it in statute is another thing. And we don't find this bill necessary. One example, he cites the Klamath example. It seems unnecessary to go to the extent that this bill goes to. Actually, we find it a bit offensive, actually, to indicate that the commission needs to review legally your actions. We have plenty of county councils out there very competent to review the actions of local government to make sure they're compliant with the state law as it reads. I think there are incentives in the system to encourage folks to talk together and to collaborate that are actually, if you let that work, I think it'll, as a result of built-in incentives, be sufficient here. So I really think this is unnecessary, so we're opposed.
Mr. Chair, Andy Shaw with the League of Oregon Cities. We concur with those comments. We polled our 60-some-odd cities that collect a transient tax, and uniformly we got back responses that they don't see this as necessary to report a new proposed tax. We couldn't think of any other instance in which there's a tax proposal locally that we need to report to any statewide entity for review and comment. We have committed to Mr. Perry to work in the interim to talk about how to better coordinate and communicate and educate folks statewide and locally about tourism efforts and how to make all the dollars we have go further, how to coordinate dollars, how to coordinate efforts. We see this, though, as a one-way communication that forces us to make a report and creates a level of control that and supervision that I think gives us some concern about being forced to report. So we oppose the bill.
Questions? I guess the only question that we would, or I would have, is that how about the Clymouth County example? And I don't know if the money went to tourism-related efforts, but it does seem reasonable that you would have some sort of nexus between a trans lodging tax and tourism promotion. And the big concern would be that you just folks might raise that tax and use it to pay for other city services. And
yeah, current law, actually, which we objected to in 2003, preempts cities and says we have to spend 70% of it on tourism-related activities. Cities are well aware of that requirement, and spending those monies that are required on tourism-related activities. I would just comment, the reason cities opposed that preemption at the time is many local jurisdictions have significant impacts on their infrastructure from tourism, and they are now preempted from raising money from that industry to help deal with road impacts, water impacts, and so on.
Now remember that whole. Mr.
Chair, if I could second that, based on the conversation we had earlier this morning about county payments, the need for more dollars in public safety is quite acute, and sometimes it's a bit frustrating to have to spend them in certain other places.
And so remember that whole, how police are integral to safety, is integral to people coming and visiting, and. Good. Okay. Other questions for the cities or the counties? Thank you very much. Close public hearing on Senate Bill 760, and we are adjourned until Tuesday at 8:45.